We want to thank everyone for being on with us this afternoon. We are very excited about the guests that we have, but today's webinar is entitled Transform the Norm, Rethinking How Teachers Teach and Principals Lead.
This is awesome. And so on behalf of the NAESP Middle Level Fellows, aka Kevin and Jess, we're so grateful that you're joining us today. We're excited to have these two presenters. Spoiler alert, I got to actually spend a little time with both of these two prior to. So I have vetted them and they're incredible. They're very funny. So be ready to take some notes, be ready to laugh, and be ready to just learn a ton in the next 50 minutes. So without further ado here, Kim and Jack, thank you both for being here today.
Hello, everybody.
Name the movie. Hercules. Who can name the movie? Come on now. Who can name the movie?
Are you waiting for the chat?
Hey, it's good to see you. Yeah. Anybody put anything in the chat box about where they'd rather spend the rest of their life, on a sailboat or on an RV as their home? Anybody seen anything?
We're getting some RVs. Ooh, a couple sailboats are coming in now, but yeah. RVs are winning right now.
Yeah. I would like that. I don't think I'd be on a sailboat. And Jack, your top of your head would be like French fried on a sailboat. So anyway,
I think we should go on a sailboat.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Thank you so much for having us here today. I'm excited to be here. I'm coming to you live from Florida. And I'll tell you a little bit more about me here in a minute, but I want to introduce my really good friend. He's marginal, but other than that, we'll be okay. And this is my good friend, Jack. So Jack, can you tell them a little bit about yourself and make sure that it's G-rated?
Of course, I can tell a little bit about myself. First of all, as you can see, my name is Jack Berkmeyer, and in this photo, it looks like I am doing lunch duty, like at a prison or something. I don't know. I look happy but grumpy in that picture. And let's see, I've spent my whole entire life in middle level education, and I'm good friends with Kim Campbell. And in a few minutes, I'm going to do a little recap of our year and how it's been. But other than that, I'm just this guy that loves middle level education and enjoys being around Kim Campbell.
Wow, that was nice of you, Jack.
It was.
Mark it down. It doesn't happen often. Well, my name is Kim Campbell, and I'm a proud middle school teacher. I believe I'm entering my 31st year. I've taught always in middle school, and currently I'm teaching a ninth grade social justice class in Hopkins, Minnesota, which is a western suburb of Minneapolis. And so I do that part of my life. And the other part of my life is I'm a dean of students. So what I'm finding in my work with all of you is that I can talk about both sides of the fence, because I live on both sides of the fence, which makes it interesting. And also I learn a ton. So I'm happy to be here. And I teach in a school that's a 7-8-9 building. We're kind of unique in the world. I think that'll change in the next 10 years or so for us, but I'm happy to be here. I teach in a school of about a little over 600 students, 50% students of color, 45% free and reduced, just so you have a little background of who I am. I love to read. I love to hang out with Jack on Wednesdays. Other than that, not so much, but all is good. So we're going to go ahead and get started today. We hope that you have a little fun, a little laughter, because we truly believe that we have to keep our sense of humor in what we have been through. So if there's nobody funnier than Mr. Jack Berkmeyer, so he's going to take it away here a little bit before we get started in learning together.
You know, that's a lot of pressure. You know, when people say you're funny, and then if you're not, it's not really, it doesn't go real well. And then your like bio is better than mine, because I was a little nervous automatically. And so I feel like no one really knows who I am, but you can Google me and it'll tell you everything you need to know. And here's the best part. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, in regards to transforming the norm. I don't know about you, Kim, but we've kind of been forced into transforming the norm, have we not, in this last year? And for me, it's one of those things that I remember March 17th of last year very vividly. I remember kind of watching the news, and I remember literally kind of being in this point of like, oh my gosh, what in the world is going on? And like, I, next thing you know, I was in a bunker and then I didn't really know what was going on. And I just kind of like felt like I was at a loss. I didn't know what was happening. And then I did what I think most people did during this time. And that is I started to binge watch stuff. Kim, did you binge watch anything?
Oh yeah.
I started to binge watch stuff, and like all my friends were doing hopeful and optimistic things, you know, like MASH and Golden Girls and Little House on the Prairie. First of all, Little House on the Prairie, I don't think was very optimistic because basically like, pa, the farm's on fire. Pa, the cows died. Pa, Nellie can't see. Like they were a very unlucky family. And so basically I didn't go down that route of, you know, of that. I went deep and dark. I went to all of these crazy places. Like I did, first of all, Tiger King. Did you do the Tiger King, Kim Campbell?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sucked me right in.
You know what I loved about it is it made me feel normal. It, like, for the first time ever, I felt like I was rational. And then I did the Ozarks, which, oh my goodness gracious. Did any of you do the Ozarks on this panel? Did you do the Ozarks? Yeah, oh, for those of you that are watching, you know what I'm about to talk about. It's like, don't drown the baby. Don't drown the baby. And I'm screaming at the television set. I'm just distraught, right? So I finally had to get down to the binge watching thing. And I finally went out and I started to walk. And do you remember the first time you went out in the streets to walk, Kim Campbell? Do you remember the first time?
No.
And you would see someone like 100 yards down the road. And you didn't know what to do. Like you were jockeying for position in the road and you're like, do I go to the right? Do I go to the left? Do I stand up, sit down, fight, fight, fight? Like I didn't know what to do. Like I was socially awkward. I struggled. And then, okay. Then I realized that first of all, for teachers and for administrators that were at home during this time, the best perk ever, Kim Campbell, you know what the best perk was?
Vodka.
No, that we could finally go to the bathroom anytime we wanted to.
Yes, that too.
It was a perk. Like if you had to go, you had to go. And then what happens? Teacher karma bites you in the backside. There's no toilet paper. See, this is how we do two steps forwards and three steps back. And so then we go from the no toilet paper. And by the way, as a teacher, I so would have went back in the building to get that half ply toilet paper. You know what I'm saying, Kim Campbell? It isn't even full ply. It's like half ply. You blow on it, it just dissipates. So here's the thing. Elementary teachers, they'd so go back because they'd be like, you know, and if they were smuggling it out of the room, you know, and the principal caught them, they'd be like, it's for a project. Don't lie. It's the truth. Like every elementary teacher I know has 47 staplers, 3,000 paper clips, 14 reams of paper, and you don't know how it got there. It just got home. So then we moved into, tell me if I'm right or wrong, Zoom. We did the Zoom. And did any of you work with someone who didn't quite understand the Zoom at the beginning, and they started very much like this, and they would lean in like they were drunk at a college fraternity or sorority party, and they'd be like, I just want you to know. And so that was the first thing with Zoom, is no one understood it. And then how many of you have said this at least 37 times about a colleague? It's like, Phyllis, you're on mute. Phyllis, you're on mute. And then you're like, damn it, Phyllis, you're on mute. And so then finally, when Phyllis figured out how to unmute, you're thinking, Phyllis, would you just mute yourself? So we dealt with Zoom. And then from there, you know, we did parades, we did celebrations. And then how many of you that are in this, and put this in the chat, how many of you had your own children at home and were also trying to teach? Okay. Let's be honest for just a second. That was hard work. Was it not? Taking care of your own children at home and then ultimately trying to teach. And how many of you that had your own children at home, first of all, like those children that you have at home? And second, did any of you Google boarding school at any point in time during this pandemic, thinking that, you know what, I'm going to put my two children out with a sofa and a sign that says two for one, take all. So then after we dealt with the parent stuff and the double dipping and dealing with all that kind of stuff, then we got into the negativity of teacher bashing. And here's the truth. I honestly think that educators, administrators have worked harder than they have ever worked in their whole entire lives during this time. As an old school teacher, I never thought education would look like this at all. And I think one of the things that we really need to make sure we do in this transforming the norm of this year is we not only need to deal with social and emotional learning for our children, but we need to deal with social and emotional learning for our staff. And one of the things that I'm preaching every single day is we might need to do a little AA at the end of the day. Now, I know what you're thinking, Kim Campbell. It's not that. AA at the end of the day is just an opportunity for us to come together and vent. If we need to put on our masks and go into the gym and do a little COVID cussing, then we do that. If we need to do some venting or just crying or being upset or angry, we should be allowed to do that, because truly, this has been an incredible time. And the biggest thing that I would encourage people to do is make sure that, yes, we do laugh about this situation, but we also make sure we take care of each other. And that's all I'm going to say for this whole entire time, Kim. So you just have to point to me when you're ready for me again.
All right, great. All right, great. Andrea Wallace has raised a hand. She already has a question for you, Jack.
For me?
I don't know.
I don't know. What is it?
Raise your hand. Allison, do you want to ask a question? Maybe she just accidentally raised the hand.
Well, and you can always put things in the chat. So if anybody has any questions, you can put them in the chat and Kevin and I will save them and, kind of put them in. But I think before I forget, Kim, Cole at the very beginning got your movie Hercules.
Oh, shoot.
So I want to follow that up because he did. He was right on it right away. He knew right away.
Congratulations.
Cole, way to go. Way to go.
And Cole, nice work. Jack will be sending you a new car. So this is great. Congrats, Cole. Congratulations. So, hey, before we go any further, one of the things I always like to do on these virtual things is I don't think we take enough time to remind ourselves why we love what we do. Why do we love working with the kids we work with? So in the chat box, why do you love working with middle school kids or elementary kids or wherever you're coming from? Why do you do the work? So go ahead. And then Jessica and Kevin, if you can read some of those, that would be much appreciative.
Will do. Will do.
Definitely.
Kevin, why do you love working with middle schoolers?
For me, I'll never forget what it's like to be in the sixth grade. That was a coming of age time for me. And I just really appreciate everyone that helped get me to where I am. So when I'm dealing with kids on a daily basis, I just always have that in the back of my mind that I was that child.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. And I know we've got, ooh, here they're coming in hot now. Oh, geez.
I've never left being a sixth grader.
As Jack's hand is still raised, I would attest to that. He's ready to go. What do we got? We got Pam. They're amazing and oh so fun. Deborah brings me joy. Tammy, I think it looks like I teach special education. Love helping them learn and advocating for their success. Megan, light bulb moments always make my day. Mary says, I love being a part of our preschoolers' young lives. They're so excited to learn new things. I swear, preschool, kindergarten, and middle school, there's not much.
Hey, Jessica, do you know this is a fun fact. If you're a sixth grade teacher and if you ever, or even an administrator that deals with sixth graders, if you ever become unconscious for 50 seconds or more, when you wake up, you're on a spit and the kids have formed tribes. It's true.
There we go.
So, hey, one of the reasons I love working with middle school kids or kids in general is because they're brutally honest, right? They're just so brutally honest. If you don't want to know the truth, don't ask them because they're going to tell you the truth. And I'll never forget, I had this kid in my class. He was autistic and he wasn't getting started. So I walked over to him. I kneeled down next to him and said, hey, Michael, what can we do to get you started? And he looked over at me and said in a really loud voice to the entire class, well, the first thing you can do, Miss Campbell, is let us know why you're growing a mustache. So there you have it. So anyway, things to know about. So here we go. So we titled this session Transform the Norm because we truly believe, and I know for myself and what I'm doing, is that this is an opportunity for us to, even as hard as this has been, is to do things differently. And this was on Twitter a few weeks ago, and I think it's super powerful. So take a moment to read that. And so this is kind of where the foundation of what I kind of want to talk about today, what Jack and I want to talk about today. Nothing should go back to normal. Normal wasn't working. If we go back to the way things were, we will have lost the lesson, maybe rise up and do better. I want to pause for just a second and ask you, why do you suppose this person put this on Instagram? And what does you suppose he mean when he says normal wasn't working? What do you suppose he means by that? So go ahead and put in the chat box or turn your microphone on and just jump in, whatever you need to do. So we're only going to take about 30 seconds here to do this, but what do you suppose he was referring to? Normal wasn't working.
As their chat, they're getting ready to, I think we'll wait and see what we got coming up. We were on a wheel. Joseph has added that.
I think one of the things that if you talk to most educators, and this is a quote from our good buddy, Rick Warmly, who told me this a long time ago, that we were using the shield of standards to no longer be creative. And I think that was a detriment to all of us, as we felt like we couldn't be creative in our classrooms when, yes, we could be, but we felt that tension of that assessments and the testing. And I think that was a lot of it.
Yep.
Kevin, you seeing a couple pop up on your end there?
Yeah. Stacy says so many ancient practices and systems that need improvement and only a big disruption would do that.
Yep. So one of the things that I know, and I'm going to speak a lot about what my school is trying to do, and that is we know that, especially in the state of Minnesota where Jessica and I are from, we have the largest opportunity gap between our kids of color and our white students. And so our state of Minnesota is always working to try to do things different so that education is working for all kids, not just the few. So one of the things that my principal says a lot that I love, and she asks this question, what could we do if we knew we couldn't be stopped? What could we do if we knew we couldn't be stopped? And I want you to keep that in the back of your head as Jack and I kind of go through some ideas. And I want you, for those that are teacher leaders and principals out there, to be considering asking your staff this question. Because if you're truly about changing things, principals and teachers are going to have to be brave, bold, courageous in order to do things different. And so we're going to share with you some of those ideas that we have. So at my school, we are firmly on the essential question bandwagon, and this needs to be posted in our room. So we're going to talk a little bit about how we go about changing and modifying our classrooms to meet the 21st century learner. So so here's what we kind of want to talk about is a little bit about how do we go about figuring out what kids need and what kids want. Okay. I think we as educators at time think we know what's best. And many times we do because we're old, we're wise and really old like Jack, but we need to take more time to figure out from the kids what they know. So one of the things that I want to show you right now is this thing called the welcoming classroom. And if you have your phone handy and want to scan that, you can. You don't need to, but if it's something you want to look at, you can. But I want to walk you through the strategy because I want you to think about it. So one of the things that my principal and myself did was we took, during lunch period, we ordered some pizza and we brought in a group of kids that represented all socioeconomic, all different races, special ed, gifted, you name it. And we brought them all together for pizza. And we decided to talk to them and get their voice about what makes a welcoming classroom. And so when you scan that QR code, you will see what they came up with. I do have one, a little example here for you. But basically, all the words you see here are all the words that the kids came up with. And then you'll also know that we asked them to rate their classrooms for the amount they learned. 5 meant the most possible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what we found out was that the kids really started to describe what a welcoming classroom looked like. Okay. And so let's take a moment to look at this one. This was the most popular, the welcoming classroom. And then the next one they labeled as average. And guess what they labeled the classrooms that they just absolutely hate? Remember, the kids put this together, not adults, the kids. And the word they chose, which might surprise you, was hostile. Hostile. That was the word they used to describe teachers that they weren't learning in and didn't like. So take a moment in the chat box. Which one of these here that you see in a welcoming classroom do you feel is really, really important?
Well, we're waiting for those chats to come in. You know, Kim, I've been very lucky and had opportunities to do focus groups with kids when I go into schools. And, you know, I ask them point blank, what motivates you in classrooms? And I do this activity with teachers as well, where I say, you know, write down the 5 things that you think kids say that motivate them. And then I actually share with the teachers and the admin what kids really say. The problem is I don't think we really want to know what kids really say. Like, we're afraid of it because they're brutal and they're honest. And I'll give you an example. The first one that they always say is a teacher with a sense of humor, you know, and then teachers are like, well, I'm not here to be funny. And when you ask kids, they say, we don't want them to be funny. We just want them to be able to laugh. And, you know, and the second was an inviting classroom. You know, that one that looked like, you know, it was inviting to kids. And I always tell teachers, if you still have that poster that says, hang in there, kitten, you know, we got a problem. You know, that was like 40 years ago, you know, and that's one of the things that kids will say. And the last thing that kids always tell me is they say a teacher who truly wants to be there.
Yep. Yep.
Excellent. You know, and
the large majority of our responses are just that it's forming relationships with students. That's the overarching theme of our responses.
Yep. Yep. So I wanted to share this with you because this might be something you might want to consider doing with you. If you're a principal sitting out there listening, I would recommend that you also do it with maybe a teacher leader. because it brings more credibility when you bring this to the teachers and say, this is what the kids are saying. It brings more legitimacy that there was, you know, there was a teacher in there and the teacher was hearing this, yada, yada, yada. So it's just something that we think is important, because here's the bottom line. And just kind of like what you had said, Kevin, is that, we can come up with all these great ideas of how to, change and transform the norm. But if we don't have a welcoming classroom first, if we don't have connections with our kids first, nothing else is going to matter. And so what I always say a lot of times, and Jack has heard me say this, is that your content will never be more important than the relationships you're willing to build. And I think that's really critical. And how you go about building those relationships is all about who you are. I might do it one way. Jack might do it another way. Okay. And so it all varies on who you are, but relationships are critical. So what we want to spend a little time talking to you today about is kind of, once you've created that welcoming classroom, what are we going to do to change instruction? And before I go any further, I just want to say this again. What I'm about to show you has required our leaders, from the superintendent to the principals to the assistant principals, to be extremely bold and brave and to stand up against the traditional type of school and say, nope, this is not how we're going to roll. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. My school is all about restorative justice and restorative practices in school. And if you truly are going to be restorative, and that could be a whole other session that we could do, it also means that being a restorative school means that you also need to look at inequalities. That we know that our schools are set up for a certain population. So one of the things my principal did in the last, she's been here, I think, 7 years now. In the last 2 years, she believed that we were no longer in the middle school going to have honors classes. That if we were truly about equity, that we needed to make sure that all kids had access to great educators doing great things in their classroom. Okay. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about being bold and being brave.
You know,
so
Kim,
pause there, Jack.
I think people need to absorb that, because what you just said, I'm sure there are people going, what did she just say? You dropped what? Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. I think that what happened is years ago, we had really educator gut. Remember educator gut? We did things because we knew it was the right things to do. And we moved from educator gut to education panic, where every time we make a decision, we panic about the repercussions of that decision. When we had the gut, we did it because we knew it was right. And we fundamentally did it because it was good for kids. Now we're in this mode of every time we make a decision, you panic about who you're going to offend in that process. Mm-hmm. That's pretty profound for me, wasn't it?
It was, Jack. Yeah. Settle down. Whoa, settle down. Settle down. So one of the things that we're doing to transform our instruction is we are as a school looking at this isn't working for many of our kids. In other words, one of the biggest things I'll talk about here a little bit later is compliance versus empowerment, or compliance versus engagement. It's a huge difference. And for many of us teachers, me included, when kids are compliant, we think that they're engaged, when we know that that's not the case. And what's happening is that many of our, I truly believe this, and I say this all the time. When this thing hit the scene, this thing right here hit the scene, it literally changed the ball game for us overnight. And what's happening to many of our kids is they're looking at us and saying, why are you talking at me? I can Google it, right? Why are you talking at me? And so moving from sage on the stage to guide on the side is critical. Becoming inquiry-based learners is important for this group. And we also know that, we continue to do it the same way year after year after year after year, when we know that it's not working for the majority of kids. Okay. And what I'm seeing in my profession, as a teacher, is 10, 12 years ago, kids would be pretty compliant. The majority of kids would be pretty compliant. They kind of move right along. What I'm starting to see now is if they're not empowered or engaged, they're not just going to be compliant. And now we're starting to see little behavior problems that I never saw before. And my principal and I truly believe that we have to do our instruction differently, right?
you know, Kim, and it's not our fault as educators. I mean, you talk about gaps in education. There's a huge gap. You know, I'm from the generation where I still think the typewriter is coming back. You know, like I struggle with the technology piece. And part of this is that I think a lot of us don't understand that adolescent brain. You know, the adolescent brain is doing this, you know, all the time. It's doing this, right? And yet we were taught to teach like this. I'm an old schooler right here, right now. Who remembers good old Paddling Madeline? Madeline Hunter, anticipatory set, guided practice, closure. That's how I was taught to teach. How many of you, as an educator, you get jacked up on Mountain Dew and Red Bull? You come in and go, all right, you guys, we got a lot to do. And the kids are like, let's go. You know, our energy and our pace is not meeting the need of that adolescent brain. Just saying.
Well, we know, right, Jack, that's such a great point. We know what the smartphone has done to our children in regards to making it instant gratification.
Oh yeah. It's feeding the dopamine levels to their levels that are of addicted behavior. It's almost like I was talking to a parent one time and it was so incredible. He said he took his son off of gaming and he said, my son became lethargic, passive aggressive, loss of appetite, slept the whole entire time. And I, you know, here's the thing, Kim, do you remember when you got off drugs? Oh, yeah. You're still on them. I forgot. Yeah. You're not a quitter. When you get off drugs, what happens to you? You go through withdrawal. And I'm really starting to question when our middle school kids that come to our buildings, are they on withdrawal because they're off of that dopamine?
Yep. Great points. So let's dive in here a little bit. Good point, Jack. Let's dive in here a little bit. I think this kind of goes what Jack was just saying. And I think what all of us would agree with is education has not changed in 50 years, except we're trying to cover more faster using technology to speed the process, right? And so things to kind of consider and think about. We also talk a little bit about this, you know, compliance is not equal engagement. And one of the things I would like you to consider doing is changing the word engagement to empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you change the language from engagement to empowerment, you are putting more onto the child in what I'm about to talk about. And therefore, let's empower these children to take on the world that we are leaving them. Okay. Versus me having to figure out how to engage them so that they want to learn the material. Okay. So think about just changing that word and then we'll come back to that here in a minute. So in the chat box, I want you to name three or more skills you think our middle school kids are going to need when they're old like us. What are three skills you think middle school kids are going to need when they get old like us? Put it in the chat box. And Kevin and Jessica, knock yourself out.
Yeah, I'm curious on this one.
You know, while they're doing that, I've always thought about this. I don't think I've ever told you this, Kim. I always firmly believe we taught to the best teacher we ever had. Well, who was that teacher and how many years ago was it? You know, that's a great example. Like we're teaching to, I'm teaching to Miss Yellico, Miss Cervantes, and Miss Fromhart. Well, I had them over a long time ago, you know, and how they taught is how I taught because I thought that was the way to do that. There's another great gap.
A lot of, we got a lot of critical thinking skills coming through here. Problem solvers, team players, creativity, communication, mm-hmm. Tammy, ability to force potential outcome of choices, resilient, creative problem solvers, communication, collaboration.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about the whole collaboration thing is what we're hearing from big companies and et cetera, is that the number one thing reason why young people quit their jobs is because they can't work with others. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that this is added to that, this whole cell phone. You know how middle school kids are. I ask you to go out with me on a cell phone. I break up with you on a cell phone. I do everything that way. So things to think about.
Hey, Kim, you've heard me say this and I'm going to say it 1,000 times for the rest of my life. You're not fired because you're too smart. You're fired because you're not a good person. You're late. You're lazy. You're disrespectful. You don't know how to work well with others. You know, there are so many other, it's funny. All the things that make us good human beings are things we don't assess in children.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I want to show you what the experts are saying in regards, and it's all what you guys were saying, right? But one of the things I want to also mention to you is that for those of you that are leaders out here on this webinar is that, when I mentioned being bold and courageous, it is about your superintendent like mine standing up and saying, we're not going to worry about the MCA tests. It is my principal standing in front of us and saying, I'll worry about the test scores. You worry about the kids. when are we going to start to push back harder on this, especially in middle school, especially in middle school? You know, you guys, I've never had a middle school kid come back to me in 31 years and say, when you taught me about Jerusalem and the Palestinian conflict, I couldn't stop thinking about Israel. No, for the love of God, right? It was all about relationships. It was about, you made learning fun. You made me think, right? All those things matter. So here's kind of what the experts are saying, exactly what you guys are saying, right? And does your classroom have this? Are you creating a classroom where this is happening? Or are you teaching to the test? It's a huge question. And I don't mean to say it's just easy to say, you know, hey, we're not going to worry about the test. Where I work in Hopkins, right? Where I work in Hopkins, we have a school district right next door to us that comes into our district to recruit our kids. Okay. When I first started at West, we were 1500 students. We're now a little over 600. So it's not easy to do that. But we're trying to make something different and special at West. And I can't tell you how excited I am to be a part of all this. I have a goosebump. Not more than one, but just one.
It's because you're always cold.
That's true. I'm cold right now too, but anyway, okay, moving on. All right. So another way to look at it is to look at this, creativity, collaboration, communication, critical thinking. You know, Jack, you always say in your speeches, right, about this whole creative piece. I think talking about that real quick right now would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'd said earlier about that, you know, using the shield of standards to no longer be creative, you know, it really is the piece of how are we getting to that piece with our kids in regards to creativity and thinking. The example that I use, and it's one that relates to testing and assessments, where sometimes that doesn't really delve into kids' creativity and thinking. A great example of that is this was a test that was a question that was asked years and years ago, and it was for third grade, and it said, which requires the least amount of water? And what it did is it showed a flower in a flower pot, it showed a field of grass, it showed a cactus, and it showed a head of cabbage. Well, what come to find out is the majority of the kids failed the question. And so obviously the answer that everyone should know is it's cactus, correct? Well, when they went and actually surveyed and talked to kids about what they chose, that majority of the kids had actually picked the head of cabbage because it had been picked and therefore was dead. And so what I'm thinking is I always tell teachers and educators, do you want to teach a cactus or do you want to teach a cabbage? Meaning, how creative is that kid to think that way, that when we know the answer is cactus, they're thinking in a whole different spectrum that isn't even in our brain in regards to their creativity and their thinking. And so I think you're absolutely right. Being able to have kids be creative and actually do a lot of hands-on activity stuff is something that's lacking in our schools. And, you know, our kids want to play. And that was the one article from Time Magazine where it said that the biggest problem right now is that our kids don't know how to play. Now, I do think from COVID that has changed a little bit because I am seeing kids playing more in regards to outside and doing some things. I do think that creativity piece might get a little spark from this little pandemic piece.
Possibly. Yeah. Interesting. So
not for everybody, but.
Yeah. So some of the things I want you to consider is I want you to think about moving from the sage on the stage to the guide on the side. I want you to consider how do you bring student voice into every classroom that you're in and student choice. And as we go through these little ideas, just pick maybe one that you may want to try, right? Just pick maybe one that you might want to try. So I want to share with you real quickly some ways that I started as a teacher to get student voice, remove myself from the sage on the stage, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that we do in our school is we create expectations together. Back in the day, it used to be, here are the things I don't want you to do, and here are the things I like you to do. Let's go. And we're titling it a social contract in which kids give input, I give input, we come together as a social contract. You can go online and Google social contracts. There's tons of videos on how to do that. The second one is giving choices on homework, giving choices on a summative. And then the last one that I started to do is starting to ask for input after every unit that I teach. What do they like? What do they not like? What would they change? How would you do it differently? Because they will tell you exactly how to make it better. That's the beauty of teaching. We get another shot at it every single year with a different group of kids. And those of us that teach multiple classes, we get it every day.
And part of that student choice is so simple sometimes. I remember putting like 5 or 6 things on the board, each with different point value. And I remember saying to my students, you have to get to 50 points by the end of the day. The harder things were worth more points. The easier things were worth less. And the fun part was watching kids go, now, if I do a 25 and a 10, is that 50? And you're like, no, you have to get to 50. So you need to do something else. So if I did a 25 and a 20, then I'm done, right? No, that's only 45. So the hard part was them doing some of the math, but I was sitting there laughing going, you just have to get to 50 points. And they were like, well, tell me, how do I get to 50 points? Our kids don't even know sometimes how to even make those choices in their educational career. Yep. And if you look at elementaries, it's very scripted. You know, you go from here to here to here, and you've got to break away that mold to give kids a little bit of voice and choice. That's for sure.
So I saw this on Twitter the other day, and I love this guy. I've been following him, and he's got some deep thinking and thoughts. But take a moment to read this, and I think that it what he's really trying to say is kind of what we were talking about. And so kind of some things to kind of ponder on. So some of the things that I have done with homework choices, as you can see them all right here. Okay. I, instead of the old read an article, answer the questions, we could read an article and you could do one of these things. Okay. When we're talking about summative ideas, I mean, you can go on Edutopia and Google 53 ways to do a formative assessment. And this document just comes out with thousands of ideas. Okay. So there's all kinds of ways that you can give kids choice in how they demonstrate their learning. Team, kids, just because they can't necessarily answer a test question, right? They can still demonstrate to you that they're learning, right? Tell me how empowering and engaging it is for me to stand up here and regurgitate information and then turn around and have them do a multiple choice test. What is that, right?
It's also great if they can prepare a proposal to you to say, here's what I want to do.
Correct.
And here's why. You know, and if they say, I just want to do this crossword puzzle, then you say, you know, you need a little more justification.
Right. So it's giving kids a lot of choice. Now, I imagine there are some administrators out here listening. And so I want to give you some ideas on how administrators have gathered student voice and some of the things that we have tried. First and foremost, any policy change that we make in our school, is run through the students. And we have at our school, our principal has this thing called pizza with the principal once a month. And that's just a random draw. I draw out names of that lunch and they go in and have pizza. So she doesn't know who's coming in. And then they just sit and chat for 30 minutes. She may have a prompt question, but she's starting to get multiple voices. Another one is a student advisory council. This is the one where anytime policy is changed, it goes through the advisory council, just like it goes through the teachers, just as it goes through our community. And so getting voice from everybody that's invested in our school. We take turns as an admin team officing in the hallway. So we have a stand-up desk. And so on Mondays, I'm out there. On Tuesdays, Dr. Campy's there. On Wednesdays, Mr. Johnson is there. And then Thursdays, we rotate. We also do the good old surveys. It was so funny, you guys. I got to tell you a quick story that happened the other day. So we did this little survey about what is it, some activities your kids would get excited about doing. And then the admin team was looking at the responses, and one kid wrote this: play basketball, do fun cahoots, and teach me how to do taxes. So there you have it. They're saying, like, tell me, I don't know how to do taxes, right? And then last but not least, whenever we have a discipline problem, I'm sure you guys don't have any of those where you're at, but where I'm at, we certainly do sometimes, is every time we have to get the student voice, they have to write a statement. And it is where they tell their side of the story before we do anything in regards to what's going to be the consequence, et cetera, et cetera. Because sometimes we find out, right? Let's just be honest. Sometimes we find out that kid was pushed to do exactly what he or she did. Okay. And so that's a fine balance we as administrators walk when we have a kid that's saying, you know, that teacher did this, and this, the teacher saying, I just want him to be compliant. Okay. So lots of things to consider there. In the chat box, write down a couple things you guys do to get voice in your school. And then I'm going to steal some of these ideas. Write down what you do for voice. Jack, we have about 10 minutes.
Awesome. I've got 80 minutes of material.
Student council.
Yep.
Lab rats. Keep them coming.
You know, it's hard. It is one of the weakest areas in many of our middle schools. And even I think it's a little, might be a little easier in some of our elementaries is to how do you tap into that student voice and choice? Because sometimes that student voice and choice is, I don't want to do anything. And then you're kind of like, well, that's not a good option. So it really becomes a kind of a tug of war kind of thing on getting responses from your kids. But I think the more that you approach them for their opinions, the more honest they will be.
And I also think, I also want to say as a teacher too, that this can be scary for us as educators, as teachers, like Jack had mentioned. Let me give you just a quick example of something that happened to me last year. So, Dr. Campy was coming in to observe me because I'm a dean and she still has to observe me. And I decided to take a huge risk. And I don't know if any of you followed the story of Kevin, I think his name was Kevin Claver. He was an NBA player that wrote about white privilege. And he wrote about how his own white privilege, et cetera, et cetera. And anyway, to make a long story short, the lesson completely fell apart. Completely fell apart. It was one of the worst teaching experiences I've ever had in my life, right? And so I just stopped everything about halfway through and I said, okay, you guys, what's going on? What's wrong? What did I do wrong? And the kids started to tell me, here's what happened. I had some kids of color that were really uncomfortable. They didn't like it. Didn't feel that I had set it up well enough. So it's being brave as a teacher too, to try different things. Okay. There's a school I'm working with right now that found this statue and it's called the finger. And it's this frozen statue with an index finger. And she called it the failure finger. And what she does is she gives that to any teacher that was willing to try something different and it completely fell apart. Because we have a group of teachers that we're working with that are perfectionists. And we are getting in our own way is what's happening. I'm not going to try this because, well, I don't know. Right. And so those are all things that you can consider. It's called the failure finger. Write that down, Jessica. Write that down. Okay. All right. So one of the things that I want to just mention here real quickly, and I know that we want to open up for questions, is this notion of the genius hour. And for those of you that, and the only reason I'm telling you about this is because I imagine most of you know about this. But basically what I want to just mention here is that we were trying to get our staff to move more away from Sage on the Stage, more problem solving, more inquiry-based learning. And so my principal said, okay, I'm going to introduce the Genius Hour to you, and here's how we're going to do it. This is what she said. I love it. I love my principal so much. But anyway, she said, in order for us to teach our teachers how to do inquiry-based learning, we have to model for them. So she went into the first PD that we had on Genius Hour and she says, we're all going to do a Genius Hour. You guys can do anything you want to do. So every PD we have, I'm going to give you 45 minutes to work on your own Genius Hour. You can do whatever it is you want. We had people that tested various breweries in downtown Minneapolis. We had a woman who figured out how to organize her closet. We had another one who started to write a book. We had everything you can imagine because our principal trusted us enough to give us 45 minutes to explore anything we wanted. You see, as leaders, we have to model what we want. And that's how this started for us on this journey on inquiry-based learning. Okay? So that was pretty powerful for me. I mean, it was like, wow. You know what my partner and I did, my teaching partner? We worked on community building activities that we would do the entire year. Okay? Came up with all kinds of activities. So I want to show you just a couple more things here before we kind of run out of time here. And that is the design model. And this is the class that I'm teaching right now on social justice. This is what kids will be doing. They'll be identifying a problem. They'll be researching the problem. They'll be finding ideas. They'll be figuring out how to solve the problem. They'll be explaining the problem. And then they'll be evaluating the problem. Okay? This is what my classroom and what we're trying to move towards in all classrooms. Now, for those of you that teach math out there and you're like, wow, how am I going to do this with math? Blah, blah, blah. You know, I always hear that when I'm out and about. And one of the things my math department is starting to do now is to use social justice issues to teach math. Okay. Teaching her math students how to debate using data. Versus here's how you do the math problem. Step 1, you know, whatever. Instead, it's like, team, would you all agree that the adults and the modeling that's going on with the adults right now for our children is not the best, right? And so we are trying to do things like that. Another way to look at it looks like this, right? You ask a question, you investigate the question, you create something, you discuss it, and you reflect. Now, one of the things that I want to pause and say to you in this is that if you're going to move to this direction, one of the most important pieces that we don't do enough of is we do not give our students opportunities to present what they have discovered to a larger audience. What a great skill for our kids to have to present. The other day I was in a seventh grade classroom doing the Shark Tank. And I was part of the Shark Tank, and the little seventh graders were up there presenting their ideas in a design class, right? So we are truly looking at changing how we do this, okay? Just a couple things here that I just believe, I think Matt would agree with me, is we got to let go of this sage on the stage, meaning I'm the one with the knowledge and I'm going to drop it in your brain, okay? We need to be bold and say, you know, we'll do the tests the best we can. Okay. I have a feeling at my district, we'll opt out of those tests pretty soon, within the next 5 to 6 years. Okay. And what are things we need to consider? I think we got to move towards the empowerment, away from the sage on the stage, problem solving, giving students voice and choice, and then hopefully a later start time. That is the number one thing in all of our surveys that our kids and our adults have said. What COVID has done for us is a later start time. Because at my school, we start at 10:35 since COVID hit.
And Kim, you know, I have just a couple of things too about things we have to reconsider. Because I do think we've learned some things from this experiment in regards to teaching during a pandemic. And the first is I think there is some validity of actually recording, pre-recording some lessons. I honestly really do, because here's the thing, is that when you're the sage on the stage, it's a one-time deal, people. You either get it or you don't. But imagine if you're getting ready to teach a really tough concept. And if you as the teacher pre-record that, which by the way, is only going to be about 5 to 7 minutes, because you don't have interruptions, you don't have kids asking you questions. And you can literally then pull kids aside, do smaller groups. Even better, are you ready for this, Kim? It's going to blow your hair back. You ready for it? Is that if you pre-record that lesson, you could even give it to your special ed teacher so that they can preview it before the children see it, so that they can make some modification, adaptations, and do some changes, or at least let the kids see it before you deliver it live. I do believe that there are some really good things that have come out of this. The hardest part is embracing the fact that a lot of us don't like to record ourselves. And here's what I tell everybody, is you got to embrace your flaws. If you're a middle school person, embrace your flaws. If you got a weird voice, you lean in and go, don't I sound like a squirrel? You got a zit, embrace the zit. I would literally start the little recording saying, do you see it? We got a guest speaker. You know, these are the things that I think we can move forward, where it doesn't need to be sit and get. They can watch that on the iPad. And here's the best part, is they can watch it multiple times, Kim. This is what's killing us in education, is either you get it once or you don't. And every teacher, every educator has done this. As soon as you finish a lesson, kid comes up and goes, what did you say about? And you go, okay, well, here's what I said. And then the second kid comes up and goes, what did you say? And you say, I said this. And that poor third kid comes up and what happens? You go, I'm not talking about this anymore. Go sit down, you know. But if you have it recorded, they can watch it over and over again until they embrace and actually get the concept. So I do think there's some things that have come out of this, and I'm an optimist, so that's really what it is. And you know, I do think, like I said, there's some good things to kind of remove us as this sage on the stage piece. Whew, I got a little excited on that one.
Yeah, grab your vodka. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up, because I know that they said that they wanted to make sure we have about 10 minutes for questions, and I want to be respectful of that. So just some kind of things to think about is looking into inquiry-based learning. We got to be brave and bold, as I've mentioned a ton of times, and we have to be okay with failing, that things are just going to go bad, right? It is, and that's okay. And kids love it when you fail, especially when you're vulnerable for them to see it, okay? And so I thought I would end today with this funny little thing, because, you know, summer is coming. So there you have it. I think that's so funny. Okay, enough of me. And this is my good friend, Jack, and this is our information. So we will open it up to questions. If you want to pop it in the chat box or you want to come on live, you certainly can.
Yeah. I didn't know you had that photo.
That's a good one. I think we just leave that on for a while.
You know, the caption is no touching, no touching.
Touching. Hey, time. Tammy has just a question about your start time at 10:35.
Yep.
How does that look?
So right now what we're looking at, and we are very fortunate, we go 10:35 to 2:35. Can you believe it? That started with COVID. Okay. Now what we're looking at for next year is possibly starting at 9 and going till 3 or 3:30. This is just a one shot, deal that our district was fortunate enough to have. Mm-hmm. And then what happens in the morning is there is academic office hours where kids do that. We're now adding WIN sessions. I don't know if you're familiar with that, what individuals need. These are the exploratory or essentials that Jack would call them. And then after school, we're also adding some more things that way. So this is just a one-time deal. It's not going to happen after.
And there's tons of research out there, Kim, on why the later start specifically for young adolescents. There's tons of it, whether you get it from NAESP. There's, like I said, there's a lot of information on why middle school kids should be the last ones to start their day or start day.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Pam, and she wants to know, are there any books you would recommend on inquiry-based learning / project-based learning?
Yep.
To read as a book club with your staff.
Oh my God. I'm going to show you my favorite. Well, there are two, this book right here. Can you see that still on the screen? Can everybody see that? This book changed me. It's by Trevor McKenzie. He's a guy out of Canada. And the reason I like the book so much is because it's short, it's simple, and it's written by a teacher. Because one of the things he talks about in there is you cannot ignore, and this was part of what I was going to talk about, what we just didn't have time to get there, is that you have to start your inquiry in these four stages. Meaning your structured inquiry is a lot about you giving them the resources, okay? You're all working towards the same thing. You're all going to do the same product. That's what you and I do a lot of for all these years. Then he moves to what's called controlled inquiry. That's where you might have two essential questions and kids can decide what they want to do. And then you get to guided inquiry, and that's where you're basically, the kids are choosing their own resources. But he walks you through all of this in a really, really cool way. So that's one. This guy right here, I would encourage, I bought this book for a few of my colleagues to read. And then the second one is John Spencer. John Spencer does a ton of stuff on podcasts, online. He does all kinds of free project-based learning webinars that you can jump on to learn. You can't go anywhere with this unless you are willing to, have PD for your staff.
Appreciate that. Jess, you have any others?
No, nothing else is coming up. I think people are either just taking lots of notes or just trying to breathe deeply after all the laughs that they've had and insights in the last 50 minutes.
I will clarify one that popped up in the chat box, you know, in regards to if you do record some lessons, you know, and the delivering of the information, sometimes our kids do need a little bit of that background information. And that's kind of what some of those lessons would be. Plus, one of the things that I love about recording a piece of that, of your instruction sometimes is, especially right now, I think learning centers are coming back big and huge into the middle schools right now, where literally kids can move from place to station to station. And plus, I think it does tap into some of those learning styles that some of our kids have, you know, that they do like to hear it and at least hear it multiple times. And then, you know, what Kim had said about them doing reports back, I do like for an opportunity for them to record some of those as well. Some of our middle school kids struggle with being in front of their peers, you know, so I think it is a viable option for some of them as well.
I can show you one more thing if you'd like, and then we can, Gracie, you can kind of wrap it up here. But this is a based on Zaretta Hammond's book called The Culturally Responsive Teaching in the Brain. And I have a school right now that I'm working with that is using this. And basically what it looks like is this is how every teacher sets up their lessons. Okay. Whoops. Sorry. Every teacher sets it up. So they start with ignite, getting their attention. What was that called in the old days? Anticipatory set. They chunk it, giving little kids little pieces and then allowing them to process. That's huge. Then giving them more processing time, allowing the brain to absorb. Like Jessica just said, you know, are people writing down notes and they just need time to reflect? And then the last one is reviewing, coming back to review the information. The number one thing that teachers ignore in this process and we ignore it a lot is the last one, and that's the reflection. Mm-hmm. We do not give kids an opportunity to reflect. We don't spend enough time reflecting ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I've got. And before Grace, you wrap it up, I just want to say one thing, and that is, thank you for giving me this opportunity. And Gracie, it was you all those years ago that gave me a chance. And I remember I was just starting out. I didn't know diddly. I was just trying my best. And so when I see people that gave me that shot, I just want you to know that I appreciate that. And I do remember you taking me to the airport and giving me advice and just telling me to be patient. And so I just want to personally thank you. So everybody, this is Dr. Gracie Branch. She's going to wrap it up for us.
Well, I appreciate that, Kim. It is just such a pleasure to be back with you again. And Jack, I mean, you are the dynamic duo. So I learned so much. And of course, there were many nuggets of wisdom today, but two takeaways or two things I had to write down among many, but that stand out, was Kim, when you said, and I think you were kind of quoting Jack, but your content will never be more important than the relationships you build. And that's just a creed that we all need to live by. And as leaders, we have to model what we want. So just so appreciate the time. And since you brought up just really quickly, we talked about reflection. One of my favorite ways to do that with kids or adults in PL is just to circle up and go around the circle and say, I'm going to leave today thinking about. Mm-hmm. It takes about 5 minutes and everybody has the chance to speak, and you know from your professional learning what everybody is taking away. So just a real quick reflection. That's my tip for the day.
Love it.
But thank you again for being here, and just hope to have you two back really, really soon. And thank you, Jessica and Kevin, for moderating today. Our two fellows from our Center for Middle Level Leadership, doing great work at the middle level, and excited for what you two will continue to do.